Of pals, pros, and pachyderms, welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 94, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your semi-serious but silly cerebral sirs and sisters.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
And this episode is brought to you by a new sponsor.
Yay!
Give a brainy welcome to Lynda.com, and that's Lynda with a Y.
Oh, okay. I love them.
Wouldn't that be Lindy?
No.
Lynda.
I've used them a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you use it for?
When I was learning Flash game making, I would use them. They have a bunch of resources for that and like drawing things on the computer, all sorts of computer crafty things that I wanted to learn how to do.
Yep. Yeah. Lynda.com is the destination for more alliteration. Trusted and trustworthy treasure trove of online video tutorials and courses.
Ah.
It's the new year. Happy 2014. And perhaps one of your goals for 2014 is to learn something new, something cool. Maybe you want to learn how to get started on your own podcast. Maybe you want to learn how to take better notes or make an app or, like Dana, learn Flash and game making. And with Lynda.com's subscription, you will receive unlimited access to thousands of online video courses that cover a variety of topics and that you can watch from your computer, tablet, or mobile device. Each Lynda.com course is carefully structured so you can learn from start to finish, or you can jump in whenever. They're full sort of courses, a journey that you can take. So visit Lynda.com/goodjobbrain to try Lynda.com free for 7 days. And that's LYNDA.com/goodjobbrain and learn something new in 2014.
Yeah, try it. It's cool.
So here's a crazy headline that I saw, and I'm like, oh, this, everybody has to know about this.
Yeah, you text messaged it to us.
I text messaged it to everybody. I'm like, you guys, sharks are tweeting now.
Whoa!
Apparently, so Australia, which is a country and a continent located far away, they're attaching transmitters to the sharks that are kind of like near Australian beaches. If the shark gets too close to the beach, the transmitter will send out a tweet to a certain Twitter account. And it is like, hi, I am a shark.
I'm coming to eat you.
Hashtag shark. I don't know what it is.
It's like a warning.
It
says what kind of shark on it.
Yeah.
It's like the opposite of following a food truck on Twitter. Yes.
It's like you want
go the other direction. Yeah.
Ooh, it would be awesome if it had an Instagram and you could see a picture of yourself. like I see you.
They've tagged 300 odd sharks so far. And they're still tagging sharks, which will then be tweeting away. Now, if they get the sharks on Instagram so they can take hipster pictures of their food.
So good.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Like, they choose what filter the way they wiggle their head.
There's a picture of your leg with a sepia filter over it.
Shark tweet sweet.
Yeah,
sweets.
Right, they can call sweets. them sweets.
Yeah.
And like I just sweeted.
be careful now.
Yeah. And then they can call the service. Wait, let's just move.
Moving right along.
Schwitter?
Sweeter.
Sweeter.
Witter.
Schwitter.
Schwitter.
Schwitter. All right. Carefully tread. All right. Well, without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment. Pop quiz hotshot. Been a while. I have in my hand random trivial pursuit card. I'm going to read questions and you guys have your barnyard buzzers and buzz in with your answer. Here we go. First question. Blue Wedge for geography. What country is known as the land of poets for its two Nobel laureates in literature, Gabriela Mistral and Pablo Neruda? Basically, where are they from, I guess?
Ooh, is it Peru?
Incorrect.
Oh, now close. I know. Is it Chile?
Chile.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. New Neruda. Who was the other one?
Gabriela Mistral.
Okay.
Or Mistral.
Okay.
Pink Wedge for pop culture. On what quiz show did Ken Jennings set the record for consecutive wins? Everybody.
Jeopardy.
What is Jeopardy?
Nice. Ken Jennings, super funny guy. You should follow him on Twitter. All right. Yellow Wedge. What file-sharing company was sued by both Metallica and Dr. Dre? Chris.
Napster.
Purple Wedge. GQ called a poster of whom, quote, the most influential piece of men's art of the last 50 years. Colin.
It has to be Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah!
That iconic men's art. Men's 70s art. Poster of her.
I was like, what's it a picture of?
Men's art. Her 1976 red bathing suit shot sold 12 million copies.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm.
All right. Green Wedge for science. Okay. What are some wild gerbils in China fed in order to control their numbers?
What? Okay. Birth control pills?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
It's like poison corn.
Yeah.
I can think of a much more direct way.
Right. Yeah. Onions and garlic?
Yeah.
What a weird...
Okay.
All right. Last question. All right. Orange Wedge. At the 1988 Olympics, what sprinter beat Carl Lewis for the 100-meter gold medal, then was stripped of it for steroid use?
Ooh.
Colin.
That was Ben Johnson.
Correct.
Of Canada.
All right. Good job, brains. And we're going to start this year with maybe I can find a relationship between this week's topic and like the new year.
Well, we're surrounded by them right now.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
We have a lemon tree out here in our backyard, and citrus fruits really appear in winter. So we got back from winter break, and the tree, which usually has like a couple lemons on it, was like, oh my God, lemons. So many lemons. Every guest of
Lemon Palooza.
Everybody on Good Job Brain today gets free lemons. I'd like to announce. You get a lemon!
Thank you!
You get a lemon! Lemons!
Maybe New Year's resolutions, people want to.
Oh, eat healthy?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good connection.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's some connections.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This week, we decided to talk about fruits. Fruits.
Fruits.
Fruits.
Fruits.
So we bust into Warren's cherry pie at this point.
She's my cherry pie.
But it's time, but time, it's time to make surprise.
I started putting the other day a music quiz that was all around fruit.
Oh, yeah?
Cherry pie. Uh-huh. I got like, it was one of those I got like two or three songs in.
Strawberry
like,
Fields is, Forever.
Strawberry Fields Forever.
Yeah, but I mean, like,
oh,
that's
there's
Lemon Tree.
Lemon Tree.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Harry Belafonte. Yeah.
Fiona Apple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't do it. I was lazy.
We're giving you all this good material. Why don't you watch it
for another time?
Wow. So again, piles of lemons all around us. Did you know that the lemon is actually a hybrid?
Yeah,
the lemon is a hybrid fruit.
Of what?
It is a hybrid of a citron and a sour orange.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I just learned that like the citron is like the master fruit in the citrus
oh,
family.
Oh, right.
I always assume like lemon, you picture
citron.
It like the top.
Citron.
Yeah. The great grandfather, the patriarch of the family.
Can you buy citrons at like the grocery store?
I think you
store?
Can still get citron.
What do they look
like? Specialty grocery store.
They look like little hard, bumpy lemons.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So just to get the old brain juices.
Fruit juices.
Flowing.
Mind grapes.
Yeah. Right,
yeah.
Right.
Pumping. Yeah.
After our long absence, here is a quiz about hybrid fruits.
All right.
I will tell you the name of a hybrid fruit, and you will tell me the two fruits. There is a trick question in there, too. Just I'm giving you the heads up.
All right.
So be on the lookout for the trick question.
Okay.
Limequat. It's a real thing. Karen.
Lime and kumquat?
I'll give it to you. It's actually a key lime and a kumquat, apparently. But, you know, which is slightly different. But, yeah, a limequat is a key lime and a kumquat. Nectoplum. Colin.
Nectarine and a plum?
It is. Yeah.
Nectoplum?
Nectoplum.
All right.
Like ectoplasm.
We're increasing slightly in difficulty. Pluot. Dana.
A plum and an apricot?
Yes, plum and an apricot. Okay.
Those are delicious.
Plot.
Pluot.
Pluot. Oh, you Pluot. Don't pronounce it.
How do you pronounce it?
Plot?
Plot?
Oh, yeah.
Is that
plot?
Wrong?
Oh, I don't know. It's just plot. Plot.
Okay.
Right. Picotum.
Whoa.
Picotum.
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 I hardly even know him.
Oh.
Colin?
Peach and a tomato? I don't know.
No.
Off the rails.
Picotum. Picotum. It's actually three fruits.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Okay.
Karen.
Pear.
No.
Oh.
Peach.
Peach.
Peak.
Apricot.
Apricot.
Yeah. Plum.
Peach and apricot and a plum. Good for me. Picotum.
That sounds good.
I feel like after a while they all kind of taste the same, like pluot or piccatum. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know. Because they can.
Because
you can invent new fruits. Yeah. Yep. Tangelo. Oh, Dana.
A tangerine and a... Oh, I was about to say, and a tangelo. Is it an orange? No.
No.
Tangerine and a...
Is a tangerine and a pomelo?
Yes.
A pomelo.
A tangerine and a pomelo. Pomelos are related to grapefruits, but there's like different kinds of pomelos. Some of them are really similar.
I call them pomelo.
I think they're
too.
Pomelo. I think it's actually pronounced pomelo.
They're
which
delicious.
Is an older kind of fruit.
It.
Yeah.
You're thinking of the basketball player Pomelo Anthony.
Is that Carmelo Anthony? Okay, I know basketball too, Colin. Don't make fun of me.
Lemonade fruit.
Marketing.
Yeah, it is. Definitely is.
Lemon.
What would you do to a lemon to make it sweeter?
Make it sweeter.
Yeah.
So something sugary or sweet.
Like something that tastes lemony that you would just be able to eat.
Lemon heads.
Colin.
Lemon and orange.
Yep.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay.
Something called lemonade fruit, which is a hybrid of a lemon and orange.
Marketing.
Yeah. Tangor.
Wasn't that one of the Thundercats?
Yeah.
Tangor.
It is. It's Lion-O's best friend. Tangor.
Okay, so tangerine
yes.
and orange?
Yeah, tangerine and orange.
tangerine and a kinkle sore.
Tayberry.
Tayberry.
Tayberry. T-A-Y and then berry.
Tangerine.
No.
And a blueberry.
And this is one of those weird berry, like raspberry and blackberry, like one of those
it is.
Things.
It is blackberry and raspberry.
What?
So there's many, like, you can combine a blackberry and a raspberry, and depending on, I think, the way that you do it or the types of berries you start with, you can get all various results.
Yeah.
And so there's the Loganberry or the Boysenberry, mm-hmm, but then there's also the Tayberry, blackberry and raspberry.
Okay.
Yeah. Grapple.
Oh.
Colin.
These are the apple grapes. They're apples, but they're not really hybrids, right? Aren't they like infused with grape solution?
Yeah.
That is correct.
Okay. Yeah.
A lot of people, that is a trick question. A lot of people think that the grapple is a hybrid apple grape. It is not. It is an apple that has been infused with or injected with or soaked in.
I think they're soaked in.
Grape.
Flavoring.
Grape juice. I think it's grape juice. But yeah. Hmm. So not a hybrid. Finally. The Cabernet Sauvignon is a hybrid
wine.
Grape. Cabernet Sauvignon grape is a hybrid of what two
grapes?
Wow.
Cabernet and Sauvignon.
A purple grape? Champagne grape?
Nope. No. Dana's close, but those aren't the names of the... Sauvignon. The Cabernet Sauvignon grape is a hybrid of the Cabernet Franc and the Sauvignon Blanc.
The Franc and the Blanc.
It's a cop show.
Yeah.
Frank and Blanc?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wine Valley Franc. Cop show.
So that is a good thing to know.
That is a good
That's
one.
Fruit trivia and Wait. Wine trivia.
It's Cabernet Franc.
Cabernet Franc.
Mm. Sauvignon Blanc.
Sauvignon Blanc. Franc and both
Blanc.
Of those, you can have both of those as
their own wines, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, I want to take you guys on a journey.
All right.
Imagine yourself in Japan, in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. Chris, I don't know if you've ever been to this place. Namco, the entertainment company. Makers of Pac-Man. Big entertainment company. In addition to video games, they also do a lot of like arcades, carnivals, and in that business in Japan. So they have something called the Namco Namja Town, which is an indoor theme park. Namco indoor theme park.
Mm.
It's not like Mall of America or anything. There's no crazy roller coasters. There's some little bit rides, but it's more carnival-y, and there's like all these different places to eat. There is a special cafe there. And this is probably the only place in the world where you would pay a pretty penny for really bad tasting food.
Oh.
It's beautiful. Like they have like all these desserts and they're delicate and there's curry, but the curry is bland and the cakes are bitter and they're sour. And it's like, why would anybody pay extra money to eat weird tasting food?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the trick.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So before you start your meal, you get a little cup and in the cup, there are two berries. And what you're supposed to do is you eat the berries, chomp, 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 chomp. And then you start eating your gross food. All of a sudden, all of these weird bland desserts and bitter curries or whatever taste so good. It's magical. This place is called the Miracle Fruits Cafe, and the berries you get are called Miracle Fruits. You guys have heard of Miracle Fruits before.
Yeah, yeah.
So Colin and I, we used to work together, and for our, I think it was like a white elephant Christmas party, I ended up with a pack of Miracle Berry tablets. They're freeze-dried berries crushed together into little pills. If you eat the pills, pulverize it with your teeth, and you coat your tongue, anything that is sour will taste sweet. Anything that is bitter will also taste differently. It will taste good. Hmm. So I didn't believe it. I looked at this. It was like weird tablets. I was like, why did I get this for Christmas? So I was like, oh, Colin, all right, let's try this. So we're at the office kitchen. And we sliced ourselves lemon, actual real lemon.
Oh.
We ate the pills and we ate the lemon and it was
like candy. It was like
it
eating.
It was amazing.
Yeah. You could literally bite into the lemon like an apple.
Yeah.
And it's.
What did it taste like?
Like lemonade, like delicious, sweet.
Yeah.
Lemonade.
It blew my mind. It really was. It was one of those things where your mouth is at odds with your brain.
How much could you eat before it wore off?
It wears off probably
like 20 minutes, right?
30 to 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. It depends on your personal chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were eating so many lemons that our mouths were like
puckered.
It was all kind of burning.
Right, because it's still
acidic.
It's still acidic, and it's still all the things that make it taste bad are still going on.
Yeah.
It's not tasting.
You're just tricked.
That's what they say. Miracle fruit can be a little dangerous because, like, you'll put tons of like food into your body that you ordinarily wouldn't because it all tastes so good, and then you're like, I have a bad stomach.
Yeah, or like, I can't feel my lips.
Yeah.
So the miracle fruit, you know, when the fleshy part of the berry of a miracle fruit is eaten, the molecule binds to the tongue's taste buds, causing sour foods to taste sweet. So the active substance that does this weird transformation is called miraculin. Miraculin rewires the sweet receptors to temporarily identify acids as sugars. And it has been suggested. The theory is the protein, the miraculin, it's a protein, morphs the shape of your taste buds.
Huh.
So as a result, the sweet receptors are activated by acids, and it thinks acids are sugar.
That's so. Okay, I totally had it wrong. I thought it like blocked the other taste buds.
No, so I mean, it also had the effect of like we would try things that were already a little sweet and acidic, like orange juice, for instance, was super sweet.
Yeah.
Like it was too sweet because we had all the original sugar and then this added. As you say, the acid tasted like sugar.
Right.
And because miraculin is a protein, you can't heat it up or you shouldn't eat hot foods because it denatures the protein, so it wouldn't work.
Mm. Oh, okay. And you can get these things on Amazon.
Yes, you can. And they're a little pricey.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fun party trick. It's a fun novelty thing.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a fun thing to try. And because every year, the plant itself doesn't yield that many berries, that's why it's a little bit more expensive. In addition to having a fun party trick, I mean, this is very useful for diabetics or people suffering. They actually do use miracle fruit for a lot of cancer patients through treatments. Sometimes food will taste weirdly metallic or like minerally. And so having miracle fruit makes food go down a lot better. It tastes better. However, here's the interesting thing. Currently in the United States, the FDA has a ruling that miracle fruit can be grown legally, but it cannot be used in food.
Huh.
So there are no companies that are releasing, candy bars that has miracle fruit.
Okay. That might explain why, like, when I see it online, it's always packages from Japan or Taiwan.
Or it's just the miracle fruit.
The pill or the chewable tablet. So they can't just put it in food. I mean, have there been long-term studies of what happens if you eat it every day? Like, maybe it's not good for you.
Well, apparently the fruit itself is harmless. People have been eating the plant, the miracle fruit plant is grown in West Africa, and a lot of the tribes, you know, for centuries have been eating this fruit. There was drama that happened in the States with businessmen trying to make miracle fruit a thing, and the FDA. I'm not going to go into that because it's a little bit conspiracy theory. We don't know what happened. You know, people are like, oh, the sugar giants of America. But the thing is, miracle fruit, it works. It's available that you can buy from Amazon.
Yeah.
You can try it and it will change your life for like 5 minutes. Like, it's so trippy.
It is. Okay. It is incredible. I do. I feel like I remember there was one or two people at our work though. It didn't work on them.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh.
Like I don't know
tongues?
If there's some. Yeah. I don't know if there's some genetic component.
Yeah.
Or...
Two people were like, "Oh, I don't taste it."
Yeah,
like,
and we felt like so bad for them.
Oh no. Oh yeah.
Yeah, we were.
It's wonderful. You guys.
Everybody else is just like running around the office.
We were so loud. Like when we first ate the lemon, we're like, I was like, oh my god,
it's getting more like sour and bitter things.
Yeah, right.
What else can we eat?
Yep.
You have all those lemons. Maybe
we
that's
do
what's
have a lot of
happen.
Lemons. We can eat a ton of lemons. No, I want to do it.
And
I want to. I want to go
stomach.
Get some miracle fruit, but I want to like prepare first and like I'm sure there's like lists online of the.
Oh
things
yeah,
that
Guinness
with it. Guinness
beer.
That's what I
yeah.
hear.
Tastes
yeah.
like milkshake.
Yeah. Yep. Ooh. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Just sitting there, pound a Guinness, eat a lemon. Guinness, eat a lemon.
Sounds like trouble.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Mr. Kohler, all the enamel's yeah. on your teeth, but your scurvy has been cured.
It sounds like gastrointestinal distress time.
Yeah, we were drinking beer, lemon, the orange. I remember Todd Furbayashi's like, dude, we could chug some vinegar, right? We're like, I don't think it works that way.
I don't think we should. It's like, I guess you could. Yeah. Do you just stare at a bottle of vinegar and think, gee, I wish I could just drink the whole thing?
Apple cider vinegar is so good for you. You're yeah. supposed to try to drink some
oh,
every
yeah.
day, but
oh, really?
It's very difficult. Huh. Yeah. Maybe miracle for you.
And it kills funguses and stuff too, right? Mm-hmm. You're supposed to use it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really is a miracle.
Yeah, and birth control.
Well, I have a couple.
Try that on some wild gerbils.
And yeah, lemons and Guinness, so they're farting and sterile.
That'll control your pet population.
Yeah. The farting sterile gerbils of China. Well, you guys know I love word origins and word histories, so I have cherry-picked some fun fruit name origins for you.
I see what you did there, Colin. I see what you did.
I feel like I'm obligated to, if I'm going to make that bad pun, I have to start with cherries.
Yeah.
So let's quickly talk about...
Oh, you're actually going to talk about cherries.
We'll talk about cherries.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is a fun one to me. I love this. Mm-hmm. So our word for cherries, it's ultimately from Latin. In French, the word for cherries is cerise.
Yeah.
And in Spanish, it's cereza. These all come from Latin cericia, which they think may have come from Greek Caracian.
Okay.
All for the same fruit. All talking about the same, largely unchanged over the years. You know, the little cherry pit. You know, we know what they look like. Everyone loves them. Every culture loves cherries.
Pac-Man does, too.
Yes, Pac-Man does, in fact. This is an example of one of the, to me, a really interesting linguistic shift. So, as I mentioned, it came from Latin. The old French word for cherries was cherise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? C-H-E-R-I-S-E. Very close to cerise, current. And as the word was moving into English, so we're talking about Old French, Middle English. This was one of kind of a handful of words that was mistranslated as a plural. So as it was moving into English, they were thinking, cherries is plural because we add S onto plurals in English. So if it's cherries is the plural, one must be a cherie or a cherry.
Huh.
So in French, it wasn't a singular cherie, plural cherries. It was a singular cherries and then plural cherises, although you wouldn't pronounce the, you wouldn't pronounce the last
way,
S, right? And this is sort of the same thing that happened with peas as well. Like, you know, you talk about like peas porridge.
Uh-huh.
It's P-E-A-S-E.
Right.
And as it moved into modernizing English, they think, if the collective is peas, then a singular one must be a P. And that was not how the original word was. Yeah. Even today, singular, plural, different in English versus French and all the other languages. Further, it is not related to mon cheri. All right, I have also cherry-picked a story here for you guys about pineapples.
You already used that pun. You don't have a new pun?
I've pineapple-picked.
Yep.
I was a little thin on the research department.
Pine-applied some selection.
Pine-applied. Like,
pineapple?
So, what'd you say?
I said pineapple, but... I said,
it started sounding like pineapples.
Pine nipples.
Pine nipples.
Pineapple.
See your doctor immediately. In case of pineapples. Pineapple's interesting to me. It's also about word change, but this isn't about the word shape itself changing. It's about the meaning of the word changing and co-opting. So the word pineapple is pretty old in English, in fact. There are references to it as far back as the late 1300s. So it's an old word. And however, it originally meant something different than what it means now.
I'm going to wonder. I was like, where'd they get pineapples from?
So what they would call a pineapple in 1400 England is what we today would call a pine cone.
Oh! That totally makes sense.
And you look at it, you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, totally makes sense. Yeah.
Like the pattern on the outside.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's enough like a fruit that it was like, oh, the pine cone is the apple of the pine tree.
Yeah, sure.
They used to call apples as the name for a fruit or anything, right?
Sure.
In French, like a potato is apple of the earth.
Right.
Just whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
There's also road apples, which are entirely different things.
What are road apples?
You've seen those if you live in a region where there are a lot of horses.
Horse poop.
Oh, okay.
Don't eat the road apples, kids.
So in England, they would, and the old, and in Europe, they would call pine cones pineapples. And so now, again, keep in mind, this shouldn't surprise you. Pineapple is not an old world fruit. It is a tropical new world
fruit. Yeah, there are no pine trees.
So they had not seen pineapples until European explorers came to the Americas and saw them growing there. And of course, they made the same connection right off the bat. Hey, these look like things we already have called pineapples. So we'll call these pineapples. And eventually they realized, well, we need another word to replace the old one.
They were kind of lazy with word creation. No. Like Indians and Indians. Like whatever.
The Tupi word, Tupi language groups were spoken by some of the indigenous peoples of South Americas. The Tupi word for pineapple is nanas. And that's very close to the current French word for ananas.
Yes.
Pineapple. So they kind of took the French slight twist on the original Tupi word for it. And we get our word pineapple from substituting the English old word for pine cone. So pineapples used to be pine cones, or just, depending on how you want to look at it.
This kept coming up over Christmas vacation of my relatives not knowing that pineapples don't grow on pineapple trees.
They grow from a bush.
They grow
from
a bush. Yeah. People were saying, oh, do the pineapples, you know, do they like fall out of the trees and hit you on the head?
Maybe they're thinking
of
coconuts.
Yeah, okay. I think they're doing the classic pineapple, coconut,
pina colada tree.
Yeah.
You like
pina coladas and getting hit on the head.
It's interesting you were saying, oh, apples were just another word for fruit, because in some other cultures, bananas were like the fruit, like when you, the ideal fruit or the according to the Chiquita Banana website, bananas were in Egyptian hieroglyphs. But whoa. I couldn't find it.
Uh-oh.
But I was like, Chiquita Banana is a big company.
Right.
Why would they make
it? I'm leaving it with them. I'm saying that they said they were in Egyptian hieroglyphs. Maybe they weren't.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they're confusing like a boomerang or some other shape. That kind of looks like a banana. Like, oh.
I mean, I would need to see the picture. Like, if it's, like, peeled and you can see the... Anyway, so I have kind of a quiz for you guys about bananas. They're, in 2003, they were the most valuable fruit crop in the world.
Huh.
Like, they're the hugest import. People eat them all over the world. They're very, are they cheap to grow? They're kind of cheap to grow, but they grow in very specific bands around the world. They also have a lot of nutrients. They have six different types of nutrients that you can't get from like any other fruit. So they're very unique. They're very,
they're like nature's healthy. Candy bar.
Nature's power bar, more like a nutritional supplement. Mm. Yes. Here are a few questions for you guys.
You should have named this quiz, I'm going bananas.
I did, but I forgot to say it. I think we're on the same page.
Dang it.
You're right. I should name it that. I was like, that was my idea. All right. We'll start with the basics. How are bananas botanically classified? And out of tree, shrub, vine, herbs, what are bananas?
Mm. Oh.
Like the tree?
I will say tree. I'll guess tree.
What do other people
think? I think it's like a palm, which is a tree.
Okay.
Shrub.
They are herbs.
Huh? No. Oh.
Bananas are herbs. They're the largest plants without woody stems.
Without woody stems.
Woody stem is like a tree or a shrub or whatever. Oh, okay. But they don't have woody stems in the world.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
All right. They're also simple fleshy fruits. Into which subcategory do bananas best fit? Are they palms, berries, hesperidium, or drupes?
Oh.
But what was the first one?
Palms.
Palm.
Yeah.
I'll go with palm.
They are berries. Bananas are berries.
Bananas are herb berries.
Are herb berries.
Ridiculous.
Isn't that crazy?
That's
all right.
Bananas.
Bananas.
Bonkers.
Yeah. What do agriculturalists call 10 or more bananas growing together? So not a cluster, like a huge
bunch.
Grouping. Not a bunch.
Isn't that a song? 8 foot bunch.
Well, yes. Like the, yeah.
Yeah. That is a thing. But what's the technical term?
What is it?
Term?
A technical term for, what is it? 8 to 10 bananas growing together?
Mm-hmm.
A hand.
Yes.
Yeah. Whoa!
Yes.
Yeah. Because it grows, they grow upwards.
Yeah.
Oh, did I stop on a question?
No, you did not.
Oh, okay.
But that is not why.
Oh, but that's not why. But they grow upwards in their fingers, like I have a hand, like this. I'm putting my hand up in a sort of a rude gesture.
Well, in Arabic, the name for a single banana is known as a finger.
Ah.
But the Arabic word for it is a banan.
Ah.
And so they think that's where the word banana came from. Although I saw on Wikipedia, it said it was from an East African word, but I saw on the Chiquita Banana and other banana websites, it was from Arabic. So,
what does Banana Enthusiast Magazine have to say?
I couldn't find.
I love, who doesn't love bananas?
Yeah. Banana aficionado.
It just fits so well.
Banana aficionado.
Yep. Each issue has a celebrity with a banana coming out. The magazine with appeal. I'm done.
Get out.
Oh, I liked it. Thumbs up. So speaking of Deo, which is also known as the banana boat song.
Yes.
What was hiding in a beautiful bunch of ripe bananas?
It's the deadly black tarantula.
Yes.
Black tarantula.
Yes.
That's a real danger for banana pickers, I imagine.
Actually, spiders do live in bananas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a story recently.
You can open up a banana and just a million spiders will pour out.
All those eggs.
There's a 1 in 100 chance that happens.
Wait, are you kidding? Because I'm being serious.
I'm just kidding.
I'm probably exaggerating the chances.
No.
There was a recent headline that someone brought bananas back and opened it, and there was a deadly spider laying eggs in it.
Oh, sweet.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, burn all those down.
I know. If it's never happened to you, that means that you're due.
No. In terms of political science, what's a banana republic?
Oh.
Colin.
A banana republic is, like, they would use the example of, like, South American countries where another power basically comes in and props up the government there, right? Isn't that?
That is half of it.
Okay.
There's this other half where...
It has something to do with they have to have, like, there's a reason for them to be valuable, right? They've got, like, a valuable crop or something to be exploited.
Their economy is largely dependent on an export of a single limited resource product.
Got it.
So they only make bananas, and they're being exploited as for bananas.
Mm-hmm.
Bananas were officially introduced to the American public in the 1876 Centennial Exposition.
Hmm.
This exposition also introduced two major communications devices and one classic American condiment. What were they? The two communications devices and the condiment.
Well, I know the communications device. That was the year that Graham Bell demonstrated the telephone.
The telephone. Okay.
Yep.
And condiment.
Mustard.
No.
Hellman's mayonnaise.
Is it ketchup?
Ketchup. Heinz ketchup.
So ketchup, the telephone.
And the banana.
Bananas.
And the bananas.
Bananas. But one more communication device.
Two
communication
devices.
BlackBerry. Oh, close.
It's close.
I mean, not so far.
It's not the telegraph.
It's the Remington typewriter.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It is close.
Yeah, I mean,
similar texting device.
Yeah, yeah.
If you will.
Ketchup,
banana.
Ketchup,
banana.
Banana.
Typewriter.
Telephone.
Yeah.
Typewriter.
What
a time to be alive.
Matt, most big things came out. Apparently, they were selling the bananas wrapped in colorful tinfoil, and people would just kind of unwrap them.
Right.
Yeah.
Dip them in ketchup.
The classic American combination, then text
their friends about it.
Yeah. The city of Latrobe, Pennsylvania takes credit for being the home of what banana-based dessert?
Oh.
Chris?
Bananas Foster?
No. That's New Orleans.
Oh.
Banana bread?
No.
Bananas flambé?
No.
The banana split.
The banana split.
There we go.
All right.
Huh.
And then a couple years later, an entrepreneur in Boston also came up with a similar recipe, but he didn't peel the bananas in his recipe for a while. And then he realized people liked it better when you take the peels off when you make a banana.
Savvy businessman.
Yeah, took him years.
Yeah. He's like, God, this is not catching on.
Why?
But they need the peel, don't they?
Right, the peel is so important.
How will they know it's a banana if I don't leave the peel?
Yeah. Right. Should I wash the bananas first?
God. So most bananas come from the tropics. What is the only European country to grow bananas commercially?
Oh, European country.
To grow bananas commercially.
And I'll qualify this, that this is physiogeographically European. Oh. And another hint, this is not an equatorial country at all. Yeah.
I don't know.
It is Iceland.
Oh.
Wow.
What? Yes.
They have banana crops grown in biospheres or greenhouses heated with water from the geothermal springs.
Whoa!
Snow bananas.
I wonder if those bananas taste different because of the
minerally.
The mineral. Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder. If somebody has tried Iceland bananas, tell us. Yeah.
Iceland bananas.
Cool. Good job, you guys.
All right, you guys, we're going to take a break, an ad break, and I have prepared, in honor of our sponsor, lynda.com, I prepared a quick quiz about teachers and teaching and learning.
All right.
So here we go. Man, classic question. Aristotle, Socrates, and Plato, who came first?
100% Socrates, Plato, Aristotle.
Yes.
In that order.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, spa.
Spa.
That's our team mnemonic.
They all hung out and learned together in the spa.
Okay.
Not pass or...
Asp.
Not asp.
Don't introduce bad mnemonics.
Oh, sorry. Spa.
We're just thinking of other anagrams. Spa. Speaking of Socrates, there's the Socratic method.
Mm-hmm.
What is exactly the Socratic method?
Yeah.
Chris.
It's teaching by asking questions.
Yes. That's a really nice way of putting it. Defined here as discovering new truths by relentlessly asking questions until a satisfactory answer is reached.
That's what I was going to say. It's like a really annoying process.
But why?
Right.
But why?
You're like, please just answer my question.
Yes, also known as the two-year-old strategy.
But why? All right. So the idea or the phrase miracle worker has entered in common parlance.
Mm-hmm.
And the phrase was coined by Mark Twain,
believe it
or not, to describe one particular person.
Yeah.
Helen Keller's famous teacher.
Yeah.
Who is she? What's her name?
Oh, God, what's her name?
It's
of course.
And
Sullivan?
Yes!
And Sullivan.
Ooh. Sullivan.
You gotta remember this.
This is
It keeps coming up.
Yeah.
But like individually, not as a group.
Together.
We all make noises until we figure it out.
Damn, I need another last name.
Anne Sullivan, teacher of Helen Keller.
Coined by Mark Twain.
That's a great trivia tip.
Yeah.
Coined by Mark Twain. Describing her.
Huh.
Just her.
Wow.
But now, you know, we say, you know, that person's a miracle.
Those berries are miracle workers.
Oh, yeah. If somebody, if somebody makes my mocha correctly, I'm like, you're a miracle worker. Right.
This person received a degree in drama from the University of Georgia and began his career in cinematography and film production. Well, I have even... Hold on.
But I'm so excited.
But he's best known for teaching the wonderful world of food science on TV. Chris.
Alton Brown.
Alton Brown.
Alton Brown. Did some cinematography work for a couple of music videos. Like R.E.M.
R.E.M.
Yeah.
Also from Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Last question. Before he became a makeup-loving rock star, this guy got fired from his post as a sixth-grade teacher in Harlem, mainly because school administrators didn't really appreciate the fact that he was teaching students about Spider-Man instead of Shakespeare.
Is this Alice Cooper?
Close, but incorrect. Dana?
Gene Simmons?
Yes,
Gene
Simmons. Mr. Simmons.
Mr. Simmons.
Sixth grade.
He wiggles his tongue at them. Like, that's inappropriate, right. Mr. Simmons.
He's like, I'm going to teach my kids about, Spider-Man instead of Shakespeare. And got fired. But that's good because he went on and became...
Well, today you'd get Teacher of the Year for that.
Yeah.
Ooh, so reaching out to the kids. Yeah.
Yo, teach.
Let's rap.
Hey, kids.
Can we rap about English?
Do you guys know Shakespeare was the original rapper?
Why do people know about that trope? Like, I totally know.
Because it happens.
Because it's a real thing.
Because it's really,
there's
really
a kernel of truth.
You're like, this is embarrassing.
You're embarrassing both of us.
All right, there you go. That's our teacher teaching quiz inspired by lynda.com. So visit lynda.com/goodjobbrain to try lynda.com free for 7 days and learn something new in 2014.
You're listening to Good Job Brain. Smooth puzzles, smart trivia. Good Job Brain.
You're listening to Good Job Brain, and this week we're talking about fruits. Fruity stuff.
So we talk about hybrid fruits, or I talk about hybrid fruits, and this is just probably more about hybrid fruits. So the grapefruit, which is a hybrid of the pomelo and an orange, you might be aware that the color and thus the taste of grapefruits can actually vary pretty significantly, right?
Yeah.
You can have a white grapefruit, like with the white flesh inside that's like super sour, but then you can have the
ruby red
grapefruit.
What a good name.
Wonderful marketing.
Yeah.
You open the grapefruit up, the flesh is super, super red, and the redder it is, the sweeter it is, and people prefer that. Most people prefer that. Some people like those
most
sour grapefruits.
Most white-thinking people prefer that.
No, I think the majority of people, ruby red grapefruit's very popular, the white one's not as much, but I am not here to judge. Grapefruits started out more on the white sour side. And around the turn of the century, the grapefruit was originally found in the West Indies. And it's one of the few like citrus fruits that didn't end up coming from like China or Southeast Asia. It was originally the hybrid was kind of traced back to the West Indies. Around the turn of the century, they started growing grapefruits in Texas. Some enterprising, go on.
What area is exactly the West Indies?
The area that Columbus landed in.
Oh, okay.
You know, when he was looking for India and he landed in a bunch of islands in the
Caribbean. In the Atlantic.
Like, right, okay, yeah. Barbados, I think, is specifically. But, you know, that's their best guess. So a few entrepreneurs started growing grapefruits in the great state of Texas, and they had some success, and the grapefruits would be white, and then sometimes they'd get a little bit pinker. There's a lot of sort of natural variation in the fruits that show up. In the 1920s, somebody found, you know, some grapefruits hanging on a tree that were like pretty red. Like, wow, this one's kind of red. And kind of figured out, like, this might be desirable, so let's attempt to grow just red grapefruits, which you do by, like, you take that grapefruit and you try to plant it to help the process along using the techniques of the 1920s, you know, as best you can to try to get desirable attributes to the fruit. And they were pretty successful. In the 1930s, they patented the ruby red grapefruit in Texas. And over the years, they just kept trying to get it redder and redder and redder. And now there's actually these trademarked varieties called the Rio Star grapefruit and the Ruby Sweet. And these trademarks are owned by a company set up by the state of Texas so that if it's called a Rio Star, then it's a certain type of grapefruit that was, you know, come up with and made in Texas. Now, they've been getting these things, the Rio Star and the Ruby Sweet, pretty red. And the way that they actually got these particular types as red as they are is the same way that they turned the Incredible Hulk green.
Radiation.
Bombarding them with gamma rays.
No!
Yes!
Oh, man.
This all started after World War II. Remember that the nuclear weapons of World War II were developed, you know, like the Manhattan Project. They were developed in secrecy.
Right.
Yeah.
And the average person didn't really know what was going on with them. What people knew about nuclear energy post-World War II was that it had created the most horrific weapon of mass destruction that humanity had ever unleashed upon itself. It did not have a sterling reputation. But now that we were in peacetime, the United States basically wanted to, like, revamp the image of nuclear fission, of, like, nuclear atom-splitting technology, such that it could continue to develop stuff and kind of like put a nice little happy face on it. So President Eisenhower introduced this program called Atoms for Peace. It basically, the idea was, let's all get together and try to find some like happy uses for atomic energy.
Not just for killing people.
Yeah.
Right. And so one of the various programs was the idea of the Atomic Garden. They set up, one of the earliest ones was set up in Brookhaven National Labs, which was a nuclear research facility on Long Island. Basically, what they would do, so they would create a big, perfect circle field, big, high walls to prevent the radiation from getting out. And then in the dead center of the field, they would build this mechanism, like a pipe, basically, a raised platform, and they'd be able to take a chunk of radioactive material, cobalt-60, and they'd be able to raise it up into the garden on a raised platform above all the crops. If people ever had to go into the garden, they could lower the material into a lead-lined chamber beneath the earth. So they would take all of the plants that they wanted to experiment on, because they already knew, they had known for a while, that if you bombard a plant with radiation, you can cause rapid genetic mutation. Basically, you can cause DNA to change, which will change the very nature of the plant itself.
And grow extra eyeballs and stuff?
Right, yeah, exactly. Right.
That's extra eyeballs.
Extra eyeballs.
Sorry.
More than
beyond the
starting.
Amount that normally come on the fruit.
Sure. Yeah. It was a circular garden because in a certain wedge, they do one crop of plants that have wedges with different types of plants and fruits and vegetables. And they would plant them at increasing distances from the little bit of radioactive material. Mm-hmm. And then watch what happened. So what would typically happen was the plants that were the closest to the cobalt-60 would die.
Yeah.
They would just die. The plants that were a little further away would get like horrible plant cancer. Like they'd get like, they'd have like tumors and they'd be super ugly and just like all kinds of weird stuff would happen to them. And the plants that were the furthest away would be unchanged because there would not be enough radioactivity to really cause a change. But there was a sweet spot somewhere in the middle where the plants would, to the naked eye, they would look like the plants that you see every day. But then inside of them, their DNA would be kind of shifted around. But the thing is, it would vary plant to plant. Each little individual plant, they're not all getting affected the same way. They're just going, they're undergoing mutations. Something that would happen in nature over time, but like over millions of years, but just all happening scattershot in front of your eyes.
Wow.
A mutant plants all over the whole thing.
Like what?
Well, inside the X-Men greenhouse, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, this, from a scientific perspective, this is a blunt instrument.
Right.
This was a throw everything at the wall and see what sticks kind of approach. It was totally random, but it actually did lead to major successes. One of the big successes that they talk about is a mutation of peppermint that was resistant to verticillium wilt, which was a fungal disease that affects all kinds of different plants. That even to this day, there's no like cure for it, but they were able to get a wilt resistant, fungus resistant type of peppermint out of these experiments. And I could only find one source on this. I couldn't corroborate this, but the source says that most of the peppermint oil that is in use today, like in toothpaste or gum, comes through, they grow this specific type of wilt resistant peppermint now. Yeah. So thank you to radiation. So in the 1970s, they irradiated grapefruit and they picked out the ones that mutated and turned into like super, super red grapefruits. Now it's safe. They're not, the fruits today have no radiation in them. They irradiated.
It's the genetic results from.
Exactly. Right. Yes. Now, do they still do this? Yes and no. Mostly food scientists have moved on to more sophisticated techniques. The metaphor that kept coming up in my research was their ability to recombine DNA now is more of a scalpel versus the sledgehammer approach of the atomic garden.
Right.
But there is at least one atomic garden still in operation in Japan.
Whoa.
Yep.
That is pretty cool.
So you're eating all kinds of radiation mutant plants. That's Cyclops and Rogue of plants.
Yeah.
I think you're mixing your superheroes. You said Hulk first.
Yeah.
Now we're moving on to X-Men.
Well, how did X-Men become X-Men? Was it radiation?
No, I think the X-Men became X-Men from random genetic mutation. Yeah. So the X-Men are more natural. Hogan was the irradiated. Yes.
I'm glad we talked about it
the
now
Hulk.
Because
he is the Hulk.
Yeah.
Not Hulk.
Did I say
not
Hogan? He might have been irradiated too.
He's round.
If you look, at his skin, he's been
like
by the sun.
There's 30 other Hogans that did not turn out quite so well. Yeah.
Burn.
All right. Well, that's our show, everybody.
On that note.
On that note. Thank you guys for joining me. Thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about fruits. You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com, and check out our sponsor at lynda.com/goodjobbrain. And, okay, one last pun. See you later!
That was the pits.
She set you up. Dana told you.
Oh, hook, line, and sinker.